Welcome. You're listening to American Women's History Journey Podcast, and I'm Virginia Benson. American Women's History Journey Podcast is part of the American Women's History Journey e-zine media family. Our e-zine contains articles, blog posts, and much more. You can find a direct link to American Women's History Journey e-zine in our show notes. In today's podcast, we have two special guests. The first is Dr. Erica Ryan, who is an associate professor and director of Gender and Sexuality Studies Program at Rider University. In this episode, Dr. Ryan will be sharing her views and research about today's topic of feminism and how this has changed during the last century, as well as how it is evolving now. Our second guest is Dr. Stacy Toronto, who is Associate Professor of History at Ramapo College of New Jersey, where her teaching and research focus is on post-1945 U.S. political and women's history. She will also share her views and research about feminism and how it has changed. I'm proud to introduce you to our first guest, Dr. Erica Ryan. Dr. Ryan has written two books about American culture, and these incorporate some interesting insights into the history of feminism. Her latest book is When the World Broke in Two, The Roaring Twenties and the Dawn of America's Culture Wars. Our topic today is a discussion of what is feminism, and secondly, how feminism has changed since the early 1900s until today. Dr. Ryan, share some of your thoughts on this topic with us.
So I think feminism, I think people have a range of definitions for it, but I think at the core of any definition of feminism is the belief that there needs to be political equality between women and men, that both women and men should have the same rights and the same opportunities. And this was true, this belief was true in the 1920s, just as it is true for feminists now. In the 1920s, which is the period that I've written about, there was this prominent divide between groups that we call social feminists, on the one hand, who organized around women's differences from men. And, you know, most notably that the fact that women could bear children, that was a fundamental difference. And there was another branch of feminism in the 1920s, a more ideology-based feminism that was focused on women's equality with men. And they organized for things like the Equal Rights Amendment, trying to highlight the ways that women and men are the same. So there have been many iterations of this, of these divisions since then. We see this kind of, you know, sameness versus difference, that tension come up again in feminism in the 1960s. I think arguably we see it in the 90s and today as well. But while the methods have varied and the targets have shifted over time, I think that that basic definition and basic ambition of feminism still holds, you know, all these years later. It's just been updated or revised over time. And hopefully feminism has been strengthened by the long overarching history that the movement has earned since really, you know, the early 1800s all the way to the present.
Our second guest today is Dr. Stacy Toronto. Dr. Toronto has written an extremely interesting book that provides insight into the conservative women's efforts in New York State during the 1970s and 1980s. The title of this book is Kitchen Table Politics, Conservative Women and Family Values in New York. Dr. Toronto, can you provide your insights into the meaning of feminism and how it's changed during the 20th century?
Well, I guess, you know, the standard definition that's often used for feminism are, you know, it's anyone who believes in social, political, and economic equality for men and women. And I think that's definitely a component of it. There's always been a range of different types of feminism. You know, people who varying tactics and approaches, you know, it's really a broad spectrum that in the 1970s, a lot of women classified as more radical feminism versus more liberal feminism, and really just different variants along that spectrum. often, you know, radical, I often tell my students, does not mean bad in any way, although there's the tendency to think of radical as being alarming in some way. But I think fundamentally more radical feminists took the approach that before you even try to intervene and change laws, you really have to, as they talked about, you have to make the personal political. And part of that is just to get people to truly see men and women as equal and to see points of oppression in their own personal lives and to see that, you know, if you have a situation of gender oppression in your own life, it's not really just a personal situation. If other women are facing the same problem, it's much more systemic. And so they really wanted to do some work around changing hearts and minds and the way that people viewed men and women. And they thought that that was the necessary foundation you would have to build before you went on to try to argue for a change in the law. Of course, other liberal feminists, you know, an iconic example, Betty Friedan and her group, National Organization for Women, or NOW, they kind of took the approach that it's really hard to do that kind of work all across America, you know, changing people's hearts and minds. So they decided that it would be easier to go out and try to change the law, and hearts and minds would follow. So that is to say, you know, make it so employers had to consider female applicants in equal measure with male applicants, and, you know, make it the law to discriminate in employment on the kind of sex or gender. And, you know, as men and women start to find themselves in equal positions across the workplace as a result of these laws, hearts and minds would follow. Men would start to see women differently, not just in the context of domesticity in the home, and they would start to think of women more as their equal. That was one difference. I mean, there are all types of variants. People who focused more on capitalism, more Marxist feminists, social feminists who decided that they wanted to not work with men at all, sort of remove men from their lives because patriarchy was so oppressive. I mean, you know, so I think feminism is very dynamic, and I also think that over time, more and more so, it's become more intersectional. I think it's really hard to argue. I don't think you could argue and call yourself a feminist today if you were okay with oppressing another group because of its sexuality or race or something like that. And I think over time, feminists have sort of seen that, those intersections, and have been, you know, more accepting of different other groups who are oppressed. You know, today, I think feminists are very welcoming of the trans community. Of course, there's always a spectrum. I think they're much more concerned with, you know, making sure that they're looking at the intersection of race and sex and different points of oppression. So, I mean, in short, feminism, there is no one standard definition. And I think that's what makes it so powerful and so dynamic, that there's always been such diversity along this spectrum. I mean, you know, at the beginning, feminists, a lot of them were not accepting of lesbians, for example. And, you know, over time, people realized, Betty Friedan herself, that you can't, on the one hand, you know, chide people for excluding people on the basis of sex and then turn around and do the same thing yourself on the basis of sexuality. So that's what I mean about over time becoming more and more expansive, more and more inclusive or intersectional.
I want to thank both Dr. Ryan and Dr. Toronto for joining us today in our discussion about feminism. Now, if you're a women's history researcher or part of a women's history organization, we would be pleased to have you as a guest on this podcast. So if you're interested in joining our podcast, please contact me at Virginia@AmericanWomen'sHistory.com. This Day in Women's History segment is taken from Sourcebook 365, Extraordinary Women and Events That Shaped History. During each podcast, we'll select a few of these to share with our listeners. On October 12, 2015, Jennifer Lawrence published Gender Pay Gap essay titled, Why Do I Make Less Than My Male Co-Stars? This actress wanted to spotlight the pay inequality in Hollywood. On October 26, 1942, Annie G. Fox was the first woman to receive a Purple Heart Medal for her work as a head nurse during the Pearl Harbor attacks. Since the criteria for the Purple Heart changed to limit the award to service that resulted in wounds from enemy action, she later received a Bronze Star Medal in 1944 in its place. Be sure to check out American Women's History Journey e-zine. It's free to access. And now I want to thank everyone for listening to American Women's History Journey podcast. Have a great day.